Good morning. It's the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for the Dirtbag. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. And here beside me to my right, Jim Gilbert, all the way from...
Liberal.
Boy, it's a good thing you live near Liberal, because it'd be sad news if you live someplace called Conservation Hill or something.
Yeah, no, I'm between, actually, we're really between Liberal and Needy, for anybody that knows.
Boy, wouldn't that be, you probably have used that before.
I have, yeah.
Well, that's out there near Malala.
Yeah.
Clackamas County.
Yeah, South Clackamas County, beautiful farmland.
Well, here we are, the dog days of summer. In fact, that's the theme of our music this month. Mm-hmm. Songs that have to do with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
And, well, we've got a busy show, we hope, because we hope you will be calling in. This is something that I did last year, I think, about this time, that asked for our listeners' experiments in the gardens, in their garden. So I tried something new, or tried a new plant or a new technique, something like that. And I have a couple that I tried this year, and we'll see if Jim's got anything new going too. We don't know of any events. I think all the Home Orchard Society events have already happened for this month. Is that correct?
Yeah,
all
August is usually things? A pretty quiet month, you know, for that stuff. It's, but
well, they have those bud grafting workshops at the first part of the August.
Yeah,
which I can never go to because I'm busy.
That's right. In fact, the fact that you're here today is unusual, because you're usually selling pancakes.
That's right. It was a very early festival this year. In fact, the earliest that it could be, Scandinavian festival.
And it's a late second Wednesday.
Yeah, so it just...
Timing was perfect.
Jived.
Yep.
So here we are, but I've got... let's see, then what do we got? Oh, yes, the plant of the month. Jim will be talking about Prunus amami?
Mume.
I should know that.
Yeah.
Also known as the Japanese flowering plum. We will talk about what's going on the farm, Jim's farm, that is, Northwoods Nursery, and a few words about his upcoming travels, overseas travels, or cross-country and then overseas.
This is overseas, right.
And it's coming to the point where we might be thinking about planting cover crops and saving seeds from certain plants. So maybe we'll get to all of that. And since we start out now with what's annoying Glenn this month, we'll just get that off my chest right now. And this isn't so much of an annoyance. It's just that I'm wondering if we really need to say, if we're talking about whatever, and we said, at this point in time, blah, blah, blah. Well, do we really need to say that whole thing? Could we just say, at this time? Or could we say, at this point, blah, blah, blah. At this time, blah, blah, blah. But do we need to say, at this point in time? I don't know. Maybe it makes it a little more specific. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's more of an editing question. Got any comments on that, Jim?
Well, you know, it's interesting, since you bring up these things. It's totally disconnected from plants, of course.
Of course.
But
I have to get it off my chest, though.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, one thing I get off my chest once in a while to writers is the lack of people, a style that's started where people will write the word couple without afterwards. And it's like the way we speak. So you say, give me a couple of those, right? But if you write it without of, it's weird. It's like you can't write, if you think about it, write pair or group or some other word like that without of. But far too often I run into people write like couple days. Well,
I'll be there in a couple days.
Couple days, is that, what does that mean, you know, exactly? Because then you're almost like turning it into an adjective. So
yeah. Anyway. We got two things there ready to go. Maybe some linguists in the Dirtbag audience will call in.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah, I might get a talking to, though.
Mm-hmm.
Claire, I want you to monitor these calls and make sure.
Right, filter them. Right?
Yes.
Only plant-related subjects.
Okay, we'll have something else next month, because as Lily Tomlin said once, that she woke up worrying about that she wouldn't be able to keep up with all the things that were worth being cynical over. Right. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the Japanese flowering plum. And let me give this phone number out before we get to that, Jim.
Yeah, sure.
503-231-8187. That's the one to call for critiquing my annoyance or any gardening-related questions, and that includes any experiments that you may have done this year.
It's really nice to hear from listeners, because that way that we know that you're out there thinking about what's going on in your gardens and orchards. And so the Japanese flowering plum, which could also be flowering apricot, Prunus mume, it's a big subject in a way, because it's well known for people who like Japanese cuisine. The fruit is typically used as they call it pickled plum, umeboshi, another name for that fruit when it's pickled and consumed in Japanese cuisine.
Is it ever eaten fresh?
Well,
or raw?
Well, so it's tart.
Okay.
The main difference, it's related to apricot. And that's what, of course, interests us at Northwoods Nursery, because we're trying to find an apricot that will grow and ripen here in our region. And this particular plant is closely related. It's a tart fruit, but there are hybrids of it. And we were in Korea when we were there, our most recent journey. We actually sampled fruit from hybrids of Prunus mume and apricot. It was quite good.
Just plain.
Just plain. Just eating it. Uh-huh. But the most fun thing for it, well, a couple things. First is that the plant grows well here. It's pretty resistant to disease as compared to apricot, and it blooms extremely early. This year it started blooming in January. The flowers on the one variety, the primary variety we grow, which is called Kankobai, Kankobai, the flowers are pink, they're beautiful, and they're fragrant. So here's a plant that has profuse blooms early, you know, January, February, fragrant flowers. And then after it was blooming in January, we had a lousy February with temperatures dropping into the 20s and just cold all month. And yet we got a great crop.
Wow. So I just want to ask some questions here. Now,
sure.
The problem with apricots, one of the problems, is that they flower early.
That can be a problem, yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. February.
Right.
And now you're saying that these bloom in earlier than that, January.
Yeah.
Why is that not a problem?
You know, it's just a different plant. It's the flowers are obviously resistant to late this kind of frost. I mean, I don't know if we had super cold weather dropping into, you know, low 20s, high teens, that might hurt them. But we were, I think our temperatures in that February freezes were around 25, and it didn't stop the plant from bearing fruit.
So they may not need insect pollination.
That's a good question. Think they would. I mean, most of those kinds of plants do, and there could be different insects doing it besides bees, obviously. There's more research needs to be done on this plant in our region.
Okay, well, but that's why we're talking about it.
Yeah, but I really am a fan of it. I think it's just such a nice plant for all sorts of reasons.
Have you harvested any yet this year?
Oh yeah,
and you didn't bring any in, did you?
Well, so here's what I'll do next time I come in,
which is 2 months.
Yeah. So what we do with the fruit is it's past. I couldn't have brought you fresh fruit because it's too late, but we took the fresh fruit. And this is an old style method of making something that I learned from some Russian friends. You take the fruit, you take half the weight. I mean, take the weight of fruit and the equivalent weight of sugar. I know then people don't know sugar, you know, but you put it in a big jar, fruit and the sugar layered together, put it in the refrigerator.
Uh-huh.
Stir it every few days. And within about 2 weeks, you end up with the sugar pulls the juice out of the fruit and you have syrup. And this most flavorful syrup. I mean, it's like hard to even tell you. I mean, it gives me chills to even think about it. I take that syrup and I put a small amount in a glass, and then I put sparkling mineral water in, and it's like, you know, it's soda without all the sugar and soda and all that. It's wonderful. Really good. I hope someday we can make a commercial product out of this.
And it's easy to grow, you say?
It's, you know, of those types of plants, it's proven itself to be quite reliable for us.
All right. So I'll look for that. We'll be talking about that more, I'm quite sure.
Yeah.
All right. Claire tells me that we have a couple of calls, although I think she's answering another one at this point.
Okay.
So, all right. Well.
No calls?
Yeah, we got calls, but she's on the phone. It's not patching them through yet. Claire is going to be talking. No, not Claire. I can't remember who she said the name was now. Okay, let's go to our first call. I can't remember what the name was. Lost that one. Been a few on. Okay, who do we have here? Nobody's listening, Jim.
Well, so I'll continue
A
little bit more about Prunus Mume.
Okay.
So when we went to Korea, one of the regions we visited in South Korea was a region where this fruit is grown commercially. Not only is it grown commercially, there was an experiment station that did research on it and a small factory where they made products, including syrup and vinegar, from this fruit. And up until then, I really thought that the fruit was primarily, if not totally, used as this Japanese pickled plum. So, and then my daughter, who was visiting, we took the fresh fruit, and there's a kind of a Russian cake called Sharlotka, where you take the fresh fruit, and it's kind of like a layer of fresh fruit baked in a cake.
Uh-huh.
And it was so good. It's like, because then you're adding some sweetener to it.
Yeah.
A little too tart, for fresh eating, but really
Do you
tasty.
Have to peel them?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Well, let's either move on with our first musical break or our first phone call. That'll be up to Claire. Okay, we've got a call. All right. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hi. Hi.
You're on.
This is Terry. I'm a longtime fan of the program.
Oh, great. Thanks for calling and listening.
Okay. I have two things to say. Number one, I'm desperate for fava bean seeds.
Edible fava beans or
yes.
Cover crop?
Well, they can be edible even if it's a cover crop.
Indeed. But there are some cover crops that you wouldn't really want to eat.
Well, if I sent you a check and a self-addressed envelope, would you mail me some seeds?
I don't have any seeds, but I know someone who does. So if you hang on the line afterwards and you can give Claire, our ace engineer, your contact information, if I can find some, I'll give you a call.
That'd be great. And here's the second item.
Okay.
Jim, I've had a pawpaw tree for, 8 years at least. And I was told that you needed a male to get fruit, but I noticed a couple of days ago that I've got a couple of fruit up there, even if I don't have a male. What do you think?
Those rogues.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, so pawpaws don't really have a male and female. They have perfect flowers that have both male and female parts in the flower. But typically, you need two varieties to bear fruit. So that you have fruit on yours indicates that perhaps somewhere in your neighborhood there could be another pawpaw, that some errant insect was able to move some pollen from one to the other. Could that be?
Do you live in the city?
No, I live out in the country, out by Shampoo Park.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, it's very possible that the fruit could be, if it would be interesting. So the next interesting part of this is, when that fruit ripens, see if it has seeds.
Mm.
Because if it didn't, it's remotely possible that it could, it could self-pollinate, although that's not normally the case. If it has seeds, then likely there's some pawpaw somewhere nearby close enough anyway, that some pollen was able to make it from one to the other.
Or an insect.
Yeah.
That seems hardly likely. I don't think anyone's even heard of pawpaw trees.
Well, good point.
You could be surprised. There's all sorts of people out there who try these weird things.
Right.
Fruit nuts, yeah. So, but that's great that you have it. If you want more fruit, I would suggest planting a second tree and then another variety or a seedling pawpaw, and then you'll eventually have more flowers for pollination.
Well, it'd probably be better to get another variety rather than a seedling. Or is a seedling edible too?
It would be, but the problem would be that Terry may not know what variety she has.
Wait a minute. That won't be happening. A couple of fruit is plenty for me.
Okay. Oh. Okay. There you go.
A couple of fruit a day is about right for me. I love those things. The pawpaws?
You eat a couple of pawpaw trees? I mean...
Yeah. A day? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fruit? Wow. And so you wait until they're soft, right?
Yep. Do they ripen off the tree, Jim? I can't remember.
A little bit. So okay. if they start turning kind of a yellowish green, you can sort of like lift them up and they'll come off like a European pear, then they'll finish ripening. But if they're just hard as a rock and green, they don't bother because they won't ripen.
Not going to happen.
Won't happen.
Right. Okay. So that's the advice: plant another variety and maybe just pick a more obscure one because you have one. Do you know the? Unless you know the variety.
No, I don't. I got it as a freebie from Nursery and Monmouth.
Well, you could ask them if they know.
You'd probably be pretty safe in planting just about anything, you know. Your tree may be a seedling, as a matter of fact.
Good point.
Yes, it probably was.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, before you hang up, now remember, I'm desperate.
Oh, yes. Okay, so hang on and give your number to Claire. And Claire says, yes, she's got this.
Thank you so
okay,
much.
Okay, yep, thank you.
Love your show, you guys.
Great, thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Bye-bye.
Okay, what do we got, Claire? Two more calls. Okay, we might as well do those. Then we'll head into the dog days of music.
Sure.
Good morning, you're with the Dirtbag. Nope, don't know what's going on. All right, maybe we'll go to our first musical break then, Claire? Okay, let's see. What do we have up here? Yes, Coco Montoya. Yeah, this is called Same Dog. You ready to do this, Claire? She's ready.
You left me alone when I couldn't even buy a friend. Head. Now you're sorry, you wanna come back again.
Same dog. Don't let it bite you twice, Jim.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know if we have any calls or not, but we want to move on with the experiments. Mm-hmm. I think gardening is nice to experiment in because, after all, it's just a, I don't know, something. It's just a plant.
Oh, yeah. And there's always something to learn and something to improve on.
Right. So. And so this is what we're looking for. If you've tried something new or a new technique or, excuse me, even a new attitude. Mm-hmm. I think that's more of what I've had this year just because I've been so late, mm-hmm. so busy with bee stuff mm-hmm. that gardens went in later and well, I just harvested my first green beans last night, for example.
Wow.
And that could be, you know, it could be weeks earlier if yeah. you get them in earlier. But
yeah.
anyway, they sure tasted good.
Well, my partner Lorraine is the primary vegetable gardener of the family, and she just does an awesome job with that. And then she makes these wonderful dinners with all that fresh, those
yeah.
fresh vegetables. And what has made our gardens, and we've actually have now an employee garden too. It's kind of like
oh.
a community garden. So our employees at the Northwoods Nursery also grow tremendous amounts of cucumbers and zucchini and tomatoes and watermelons and. And what has made this all possible on this scale and all this success is this simple thing of using the plastic-covered ground.
Yes, that's what you experimented with several years ago now.
Yeah, and that continues to be just a really super way to, you know, there's hardly any weeds, and the plants love that warm soil, and we just get great crops.
Yeah. Well, another thing that... I put some photos on the website in the dirtbag blurb, whatever else you call it, about a squash plant that had crawled up a tree one year. And so there's this big winter squash hanging in the tree
wow.
with just, of course, a huge neck or a stem
yeah, yeah.
on that thing
yeah,
because
yeah, yeah.
it needs to be. There's just 10-pound squash hanging in the tree.
it
looks pretty good.
So, yeah.
Okay, well, let's see what the callers have to say. All right. Are we ready? We're ready. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag. That one wasn't. One call.
I'm Jonathan.
Oh, there we go. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hi. I had an epiphany in my garden I wanted to share with others in case I can help some people.
Excellent.
So the vitality of my garden started going down over the years to the point where I was thinking of replacing all the soil, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then I had this epiphany. I'm like, I'm putting this chlorinated water in my garden. I bet it's killing all the, you know, beneficial organisms. And so what I did was I hooked up a carbon filter in line with drip hoses. And it's amazing. The vitality has come back gangbusters. I see my ceiling every time I put a shovel in. The plants are more resistant to disease and bugs. They're bigger. The fruits are bigger. And it's like it was the second year I started this garden 20 years ago. And it's just amazing. So I just wanted to share that.
Huh. And this is Portland City Water?
Actually, I'm down in Corvallis.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because Portland doesn't use chlorine. They use chloramine. But
well,
nevertheless,
we
we
have chloramine, too.
Okay. Right.
But I filter it out now, and I just can't say how much better my garden's come back.
Well, that's interesting observation. You didn't change other things
right.
in your garden.
Yep.
Because, I mean, you have to wonder, well, you know, how does anything grow then? If you're using, you know, irrigation water. You know, I mean, using
right.
irrigated,
if you're irrigating,
sitting water, irrigating.
Water.
Right, yeah.
Huh.
Well, you know, I've thought about that before. Those very things when you're making compost tea, you know, I just don't hear mm-hmm. much about compost tea anymore. Back 15 years ago, you know, it was a big thing that, you know, you're brewing the bacteria in compost in just 24 hours.
Right.
And, but you had to be careful that it was, you know, pure water and not, you know, chlorinated water or anything else because it would kill the things it is designed to kill. Which is what
yeah,
you want
I make,
to grow.
I make mine with captured rainwater in my compost teas, so I don't
yeah.
worry about that.
So I went to a pet store and got some, I don't know what they were, drops of some sort that you would use for fish tank, putting in your fish tank if you're going to put water in there.
There you go.
To counteract that, too, so.
Huh. So these are drops that counteract the chlorination effect.
Yeah.
Huh. So we don't have that where we live. Of course,
we're
country, so we just have wells and the water.
You just have cow manure.
Yeah.
Yeah, just cow manure, right. That's right.
Well, thank you very much for that call and observation. That's exactly like what we like to hear.
Great. Have a good day.
Okay. Yeah. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, what do we got? Do we have any other calls? Yeah, one more call there. Okay, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, I have a question. Are there any cover crops that might work against preventing flea beetles in the soil or other critters like that?
Well, none that I know of. And flea beetles are, at least for me, and this may be different from you, that they're just a minor annoyance at the beginning of the season, and then the plant grows out of it. But maybe you're having a different problem.
Pretty bad. I'm thinking of just letting this one section go fallow next year because of it.
What is it that was there?
Just a lot of, ground cherries and greens. They love radishes. Collard, stuff like that.
And you're sure they're flea beetles? These are the ones that put little holes or little dimples or something in the leaves.
No, they are because
you can see them.
I sprayed with water, they just went berserk and it was pretty gross.
These are flea beetles, little black insects that you reach for them and they jump off the leaf. And they go somewhere. But to tell you the truth, I don't know how they overwinter. They must pupate someplace. But so,
are there any, does neem work? Or do you have any?
Neem probably would work on them. Does the watering, does not? I mean, frequent watering?
Yeah, I'm trying to do it right, and they won't leave.
Yeah.
So.
Do you grow, tell you the truth, they are a minor annoyance for me, I don't know what other insects might naturally control them. But you could hedge your bets by planting plants that attract beneficial insects. And I'm thinking that, wasps and whatnot would probably, a flea beetle would have to have a larva. Is it on the plant? I tell you the truth, I haven't really researched that as much as some of the other ones.
You're lucky. Yeah. I had a couple other questions. So are there
but before you end this one, I would say plant some beneficial insect attracting plants.
Okay.
Just around your garden or even in that bed. If you're going to leave it fallow, plant a cover crop or some beneficial insect attracting plants.
Okay.
And they could be, there's a lot of things, members of the umbellifera, cosmos, sunflowers, anything that attracts really pollinator bees will attract beneficial insects too. Okay, that's all.
Okay. I'm pretty experienced gardener farmer, but I've never had good luck with edamame. Now I'm wondering if there's some other special requirements or secrets to they just
I haven't grown them, but what's the problem?
They're just kind of stunted and the pods are small and I've tried different times a year and it's just and I bought them from Starks and I've planted seeds, but I don't know.
And have you ever had a successful crop?
I wouldn't call any of the time successful.
Okay. So. Jim, do you have any experience?
This is great. These are great questions. I'm writing them down because I want to look at research
myself. We don't know what the heck
you're
talking about.
Years ago, I tried growing soybeans, and it wasn't very successful, but I didn't try growing specifically edamame, but I love eating it. And, I think our climate is probably not super good for soybeans because of our cool nights.
Mm-hmm.
Where they grow it commercially in the Midwest, it's hotter just in general.
It's a good climate, tomato growing weather too.
I think I've heard my partner Lorraine maybe can help me with this too, but I think I've heard of some strains of soybean and edamame that might work here. So I'll try to bring something that.
Well, let's open this up to the dirtbag audience to see if anybody has grown successfully the edamame and you're in the Portland area?
Yeah, I'm in Ridgefield, Washington.
Okay.
So, close enough.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate
your advice and love the show. Yeah.
Great.
Thanks for the questions.
Yeah, we're almost 0 for 2 on that one, Jim.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. Yeah, we'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
Flea beetles.
Yeah.
That sounds like a big problem there.
I know. I don't even know the insects.
I kind of have a little bit of issue, although none this year, on tomatoes. Hey, maybe just putting them in later. That's not a bad idea. Hey, caller, maybe plant later in the season, because I didn't notice any this year on my tomatoes, which were also somewhat late getting in. Okay, back to the phone. Good morning. There we are. You're with the dirtbag.
Hey.
Yes, that's you. Go ahead.
This is precisely a gardening question, but it's a plant question, and I wanted to ask you if you had any counsel about carbon sequestration.
Okay.
I got about 7 acres. Well, I had 7 acres and built a couple of houses. I got 5 acres. It's all in pasture.
What if he's cutting in and out on us? Certainly out now.
Well, we could do.
Maybe he can hear us. Maybe he can't. But we can't hear him.
I can hear you guys.
Okay, now we can hear you.
Okay, so
he's cutting in. He's cutting
right
in.
Now my glands is pasture grass. Yeah. Should I plant trees if? And if so, what kind of trees? And I know this is probably not in your wheelhouse.
Well, is your main goal to sequester carbon? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to have to. Yeah.
It sounds like we're traveling or driving.
Yeah, that could be.
Well, if the main goal is sequester carbon, plant Douglas fir trees.
Plant fir trees?
The Douglas fir. They grow fast.
They grow fast.
Very happy in our climate.
Yeah. Okay. We'll have to leave it at that. But I'm just wondering if there are other ways. If he's, the questions would be, well, is he going to garden that area then afterwards or not? But, no-till is, of course, a great way not to sequester carbon. Just don't till and leave what's there.
Yeah, that's one. Yeah, and then if you want to start adding more carbon, plant trees, and especially ones that grow fast.
Yeah. Or leave the debris on the field, I think, too. If you grow corn or something, just leave it.
Yeah.
Or compost it, certainly, because that helps anyway.
Yeah.
Sequester that carbon in microorganisms. That's what happens there. Okay, well, shall we do the stumper, Jim?
Sure.
Okay, we got the stumper theme ready to go. We're going to skip a song there for now. We might come back to it. But here comes the stumper theme. Maybe. Maybe not. It's on the hard drive, number 4 there, sorry. But we don't need it right exactly. We can just go for it. Let me get my glasses
and
on.
I don't
here.
Even know what the stumper is. So
okay, well, you probably know the answer to this. No.
We'll
All right. I'm going to make it tough first, and then maybe we'll make it easier. Which of the following is not a member of the rose family?
Mm.
Now, did we determine that the Prunus amume is a member of the rose family?
Yes.
Yes, we did. Okay, so which is not a member of the family? Peaches, pears, apricots, quince, strawberries, apples. Yes, which is not a member of the rose family? This might be a trick question.
Yeah.
Okay, if you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187. Or if you have any questions, same number, or if you have any experiences that you would like to share with us. 503-231-8187. Well, you already mentioned, or maybe that was during the break here when we were talking, that you are harvesting nectarines now on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And peaches, presumably?
Yeah. So among our projects that we're so excited about is, besides trying to find an apricot, which we're optimistic we're going to do this.
That blooms in January.
Well, not that blooms in January, but ones that we can actually go out. Can you imagine, Glenn, how much nice it would be to be able to go out into your backyard or your garden and pick, you know, delicious,
however many you want,
juicy, tender apricots and just like go nuts. Anyway, so that's your goal. That's my dream. So, but I also really like peaches and nectarines, and that's our second, the work we've been doing over the many years. Oh, and by the way, this is the 40th anniversary of Northwoods Nursery.
Goodness.
Yeah, and, you know, I can hardly believe it. 1979, started planting the first seeds.
That was the first year I had my Swedish pancake booth at the Scandinavian Festival.
That's incredible. 40 years of pancakes? And
41, actually.
Well.
Because we just had the 41st year.
Yeah, that's amazing. So and once we started the nursery in Hood River up in the mountains and then moved it to Portland, moved it to Willamette Valley in 1982. And the focus since then has been to grow fine fruiting plants that will grow easily here so people don't have to spray them. Because how many homeowners want to go out and spray their peach seven times so they can get the fruit?
Not only do they want to, but they don't.
They don't.
That's right.
And peach leaf curl is a pretty terrible disease. And so what we've been working on is finding peach and nectarine varieties that are resistant to that. So what we're doing right now is we've harvested fruit from a bunch of seedlings that we've planted out that have parents that are resistant. And the plants themselves are showing really good promise. And now we're tasting different fruit. Every one of them.
Do you have a evaluation sheet?
Yes.
You know, is it firmness, appearance, taste?
Yep. And Lorraine is the scientist of the family, so she keeps that data. And I'm one of the tasters.
Whew.
Not a bad role to have, actually.
No. You know, some of my fondest memories of the Home Orchard Society's All About Fruit Show is when I was a judge. Did it twice for the apple pie contest.
Oh, yeah, that would be fun.
Similar to what you're experiencing there.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, well, if you want to, just let me know if you need any more taste testers.
Well, is that a bad idea? You know, that would be fun. Next year we could do that.
Okay.
Broaden the group.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. So.
All right, so tasting now.
Yeah, so that's.
Are you done budding, grafting?
We're in the middle of it right now.
Oh, I'm not. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for listeners who aren't totally familiar with that, so over this time of year, what we do is producing fruit trees, we go to our mother block where we have the varieties, and we take scions, cuttings, with buds, with the this year, 1 year growth, and then our talented crew goes out to the rootstock field, which we have rootstock. Right now we're doing apples. And we take the one bud off that stick and make a cut in the rootstock, place the bud in that cut, wrap it up with some tape, and then everything goes well. The bud heals. A month from now, we cut the tape off. And then next spring in March, we cut the top off.
So these rootstocks are not bare root. They're all planted in a row.
They've been growing in the field for all summer. So
and then you'll dig those up when they're dormant.
Then they'll grow a year that after next spring when we cut the top off, the bud will grow, make the new tree, and then in the fall, late fall or summer,
a year and
winter,
a half from, I mean, a year from now. Okay.
Basically, yeah. In like November, December, we'll dig the trees up.
Yeah, you got a little time invested in those.
Yeah, and you know it's a sort of a miraculous thing that this works.
Well, you've done it for 40 years, or
maybe
not 40, quite 40, but
pretty much 40 years. Yeah, and it's and I remember when I first started, I went down to Oregon State and talked to a man named Harry Lagerstad, who was one of the professors there and a grower, and I asked him to show me how to graft.
Oh.
There wasn't any other easy way to do it. I went down there and sat and worked with him for an afternoon in a greenhouse and learned how to graft plants.
Well, it's nice he contributed his knowledge, I mean, because the Home Orchard Society was just barely going at that point.
Yeah. So it was good. I mean, it was, the learning curve was very steep in those early days.
All right. Well, what's next to harvest out there?
Well, we're getting into, apples have started.
Yeah.
And there's later varieties. Interesting yesterday. I was walking through another part of our nursery. We have a Braeburn apple tree. And Braeburn is not an apple that I would necessarily recommend for the Northwest. It does get some scab and ripens pretty late, but it does generally ripen. But I was looking at this tree that hadn't been pruned for a long time, and it was probably 15 feet tall, and it looked like this great big bush, just the branches already going, just drooping down to the ground.
With fruit.
It must have been at least a couple hundred pounds of fruit on it. It's just like this discrete curtain of leaves and fruit.
Like a willow.
Ooh, crazy. Quite spectacular, actually.
Yeah. You must go through a lot of fruit out there. Well, while we're on the subject here, maybe you could give us a brief rundown of what you hope to accomplish with your next overseas trip, which will mean you miss September's show.
I will miss that. But we're going to fly from here to Germany. Our first stop will be in the Berlin area, and we arranged with a friend there to show us the latest techniques of growing and processing Seaberry.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of the world capital of Seaberry, Hippophae rhamnoides, sometimes known as sea buckthorn. One of my favorite berries, when we have a project going to find some new varieties too. But I think if someday a future commercial industry could be made around this fruit. It already happens in Germany, and it's happened in Russia and China. There's no reason it can't happen here in the Pacific Northwest.
So you're going to learn about processing those?
Yeah, there's numerous processing plants and also growers, and I want to see what their latest techniques are. What they're doing, and from there we will go to Italy. Not a bad place to go to. Or
no,
the pizza's to die for, and we're going to visit a friend who actually was here, visited us a couple of years ago. Look at figs and some other interesting fruit in her region.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll go to an area that we've never been to before, Sicily, and fly to Palermo from the region around Florence. And there we will also look for figs and some other interesting prunus that they have there. And then, because you just can't, if you're already that far, you might as well continue. So we're going to head from there back to Uzbekistan for a brief stop, and we'll be looking at pomegranates, which will be starting to ripen in mid-September in Uzbekistan, visiting our friends there. And from Uzbekistan, we continue on to South Korea for, believe it or not, and I might have mentioned this last time, the Schizandra or Magnolia Vine Festival.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to make, maybe that'll be next month's plant, or
we talked about
October, plant of the month.
Plant of the month, yeah.
Magnolia Vine.
I just can't wait. I mean, it's like, this is such a cool plant. And I mean, we've been growing it for 35 years, and never in my wildest dreams could I imagine that there would be a festival around it. So, can't wait.
Well, that sounds like almost a round the world trip, although you probably go up over the Arctic Circle more than the New Jersey, via New Jersey, did last time.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the route exactly, but yeah, we'll be circumnavigating a good part of the globe on that.
Okay, well, we don't have an answer for our stumper yet about which is not a member of the Prunus or Rose family.
Rosaceae.
Yeah, it's just going to be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And
if I could call in, I would, but I don't.
Yeah, that's.
I can use my phone here.
You're a staff member. You're not allowed to.
Only win one prize every 10 years, right? Or
yeah, you have not won in the last. Okay, so we'll do that. We'll do our second musical break, and then we'll come back and talk about maybe saving seeds.
Sure.
Yeah, that's kind of along the lines of grafting.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit there. So, we have got the Steve Miller Band, Stevie Guitar Miller. No More Doggin'. that's not the right one. That's Coco. That's Coco again. Let's see if we can find Stevie Guitar Miller, No More Doggin'. Could be. Oh, that's the third one. Do we have Stevie there? Stevie Guitar Miller? Steve Miller? No More Doggin' is the title. Oh, maybe it's the maybe I got the wrong titles on there. Well, we can listen to this. This is John Prine.
There you go.
Yeah, this is from the album Lost Dogs and Mixed Blessings.
I like John Prine.
Yeah.
There's 300 men in the state of Tennessee. They're waiting to die. They won't never be free. I ain't hurting nobody. I ain't hurting no one. $6,700,033 lights on. You think someone could take the time to sit down and listen to the words of my song? At the beach in Indiana, I was 9 years old. Heard a little Richard singing Tutti Frutti from the top of a telephone pole.
I wasn't hurting nobody.
I wasn't hurting no one. There's roosters laying chickens, and chickens laying eggs. Farm machinery eating people's arms and legs. I ain't hurting nobody. I ain't hurting no one. Perfectly crafted popular hit songs never use the wrong rhyme. You think that waitress could get my order right the first time?
There's John.
Yep.
The Rhyming John.
It's good.
Yep. John Prine. Okay, we've got Tony on the line. Morning, Tony. You're with the Dirtbag.
Morning. What I've got this 10x12 greenhouse, and but I put it on this spot that I leveled out, and then I got in it, all the topsoil's gone, and so the soil at the floor of the greenhouse is all clay. So I was thinking of taking that soil out and putting in some of the spent mushroom compost. Mm-hmm. And but I'm wondering, you know, so I grow the four marijuana plants in there, and so I'm wondering, you know, am I gonna because that soil, that clay soil, I don't think it'll drain. Is that gonna work for me?
Well, it could. Having the two together could work pretty well because clay soil is actually quite mineral rich, but it doesn't have the organic matter, and that's where the spent mushroom compost would come in. But is it mushroom compost? Is that, did I remember that right? Is that what you're getting?
You know, I haven't. I've used it in the past.
Okay.
But I haven't gotten any of there. Some. Friend of mine that I have coffee with says that he knows where to get it, and but that I was just wondering if I'm going to have a with the plants, if I'm going to have a issue with standing water, you know, with,
well,
that, with
you
that
would
clay and the fact that it won't drain.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to mix the whatever you get, the organic matter, into the clay. I mean, rototill it or hand spade it or whatever you need to do, because it's, it sounds like the topsoil is gone. I mean, you've always had that clay underneath the topsoil.
Right, and, the topsoil's gone. It was a bermed property, and I've flattened it out. And when I did that, the topsoil is gone now, and I'm down to the clay. in what's there. So,
well, what you might need to do then is not only the mushroom compost, is get some other compost, you know, maybe composted steer or just manure, composted manure, because that would have more nutrients in it, nitrogen. Because the mushroom compost is really kind of spent. And not only that, but it's sterilized, so you're only growing one type of mushroom, one type of fungus rather than, you know, 1,000.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But you need that.
They sterilize it prior to putting the mushrooms in.
Right. Now, you know, if they marketed it, you know, saying, you know, mushroom compost and manure compost, you know, together, that would be pretty hot. I can't say that word, but that'd be pretty good stuff.
Right. What about, you know, I do have, chicken manure or, you know, available. Is that too hot, do you think?
If you compost it first. When are you going to plant?
Well, I didn't do that this year because I have so much left over from last year.
Get that chicken manure and the mushroom compost on top of your clay and then mix it in. You couldn't just use those composts and grow your plants in it. You would have water that just runs right through that, and then you would have it standing on your clay.
Okay.
Because the compost does not hold water very well.
Okay. All right.
Can you get a rototiller in there?
Say again?
Can you get a rototiller or a... You can just turn it with your shovel, too.
Maybe one of those little tiny
ones. Well, you wouldn't get deep enough, really.
But I could do it out. I could do the mixing outside and then, you know, put it in the...
It's only 10 by 12.
Say again?
It's only 10 by 12. You can do it by hand.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just kind of shovel, scoopy around. Okay.
Yeah, just mix it in.
What do you think... A friend of mine also has worms.
Worm compost?
Red wigglers that are those. You want to mix everything up. Are those good?
No. The compost they make is good, but the worms wouldn't survive in that environment.
Okay.
That's not their habitat.
Okay.
The red wigglers.
I have a question. I've oftentimes talked to people who talk about clay as kind of a general thing, and you know, more specifically, have you had issues with drainage with your soil? Do you have some reason to think that this clay is going to be like a hard pan, or is it pretty normal subsoil?
Yeah. Well, last year, what I put the plants in these. I think they're 10 or maybe 15-gallon plastic pots, and set those, you know, on the clay in the greenhouse. But of course, that confines the plant to those pots, and so I was thinking, if I dug the soil out or dug that clay out and put a soil in there more fertile to the plants, that the plants could get taller, because last year they just consumed the whole greenhouse.
Can't get much bigger than that then.
We got to
wrap it up here.
Yeah. I would just be, you know, so clay can be quite fertile.
Yes.
Just the very
so I wouldn't, you know, here's my recommendation. Don't remove that clay soil. Just add those other composts and mix it in. Dig down as far as you can comfortably, you know, a foot. Mix it in, and I'll bet you your plants kick ass.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Thanks for the advice.
Yep, you bet. Okay, answer to the garden stumper. Which of the following is not a member of the rose family? Peaches, pears, apricots, quince, strawberries, and apples. Jim?
Strawberries.
Wrong. They're all members of the prunus family.
Rose family.
Mm. Yeah.
Sort of a trick question.
It was a trick question. Everyone was. Mm. Okay, Jim, we'll be thinking about you next month and wherever you'll be at that point.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll be back in probably 4 weeks now. second Wednesday, we'll have somebody else in Jim's chair, almost guaranteed. Maybe it'll be the compost edition.
If I'm somewhere where I can listen to the show, I will do so.
Well, you can do it online.
Well, there's that too.
Yep. Right.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Claire. This is Glenn Andreessen. I'll be back next month. Be well.